minus 70, and counting. Richards walked rapidly to the bathroom, being calm, ignoring his terror the way a man on a high ledge ignores the drop. If he was going to get out of this, it would be by keeping his head. If he panicked, he would die quickly. Someone was in the shower, singing a popular song in a cracked and pitchless voice. No one was at the urinals or the wash stands. The trick had popped effortlessly into his mind as he stood by the window, watching them gather in their offhand, sinister way. If it hadn't occurred to him, he thought it would be there yet, like Aladdin, watching smoke from the lamp coalesce into an omnipotent djinn. They had used the trick as boys to steal newspapers from development basements. Molly bought them. 2 cents a pound. He took one of the wire toothbrush holders off the wall with a hard snap of his wrist. It was a little rusted, but that wouldn't matter. He walked down to the elevator, bending the toothbrush holder out straight. He pushed the call button, and the cage took a slow eternity to come down from 8. It was empty. Thank Christ it was empty. He stepped in, looked briefly down the halls, and then turned to the control panel. There was a key slot beside the button marked for the basement. The janitor would have a special car to shove in there. An electric eye scanned the card, and then the janitor could push the button and ride down to the basement. What if it doesn't work? Oh, never mind that. Never mind that now. Grimacing in anticipation of a possible electric shock, Richards jammed the toothbrush wire into the slot and pushed the basement button simultaneously. There was a noise from inside the control panel that sounded like a brief electronic curse. There was a light, tingling jolt up his arm. For a moment, nothing else. Then the folding brass gate slid across, the doors closed, and the elevator lurched unhappily downward. A small tendril of blue smoke curled out of the slot in the panel. Richards stood away from the elevator door and watched the numbers flash backwards. When the L lit, the motor high above made a grinding sound, and the car seemed about to stop. Then, after a moment, perhaps after it thought it had scared Richards enough, it descended again. 20 seconds later, the door slid open, and Richards stepped out into the huge, dim basement. There was water dripping somewhere, and the scurry of a disturbed rat. But otherwise, the basement was his. For now. Minus 69 and counting. Huge, rusted heating pipes, festooned with cobwebs, crawled crazily all over the ceiling. When the furnace kicked on suddenly, Richards almost screamed in terror. The surge of adrenaline to his limbs and heart was painful, for a moment, almost incapacitating. There were newspapers here, too, Richards saw. Thousands of them, stacked up and tied with string. The rats had nested in them by the thousands. Whole families stared out at the interloper with ruby, distrustful eyes. He began to walk away from the elevator, pausing halfway across the cracked cement floor. There was a large fuse box bolted to a supporting post, and behind it, leaning against the other side, a litter of tools. Richards took the crowbar and continued to walk, keeping his eyes on the floor. Near the far wall, he spied the main storm drain to his left. He walked over and looked at it, wondering in the back of his mind if they knew he was down here yet. The storm drain was constructed of vented steel. It was about 3 feet across, and on the far side there was a slot for the crowbar. Richards slipped it in, levered up the cover, and then put 1 foot on the crowbar to hold it. He got his hands under the lip of the cover and pushed it over. It fell to the cement with a clang that made the rats squeak with dismay. The pipe beneath slanted down at a 45-degree angle, and Richards guessed that its bore could be no more than 2.5 feet. It was very dark. Claustrophobia suddenly filled his mouth with flannel. Too small to maneuver in. Almost too small to breathe in. But it had to be. He turned the storm drain cover back over and edged it toward the pipe entrance, just enough so he could grip it from beneath once he was down there. Then he walked over to the fuse box, hammered the padlock off with a crowbar, and shoved it open. He was about to begin pulling fuses when another idea occurred to him. He walked over to the newspapers, which lay in dirty yellow drifts against the whole eastern length of the cellar. Then he ferreted out the folded and dog-eared book of matches he'd been lighting his smokes with. There were three left. He yanked out a sheet of paper and formed it into a spill, held it under his arm like a dunce cap, and lit a match. The first one guttered out in a draft. The second fell out of his trembling hand and hissed out on the damp concrete. The third stayed alight. He held it to his paper spill and yellow flame bloomed. A rat, perhaps sensing what was to come, ran across his foot and into the darkness. A terrible sense of urgency filled him now, and yet he waited until the spill was flaming a foot high. He had no more matches. Carefully, he tucked it into a fissure in the chest-high paper wall and waited until he saw that the fire was spreading. The huge oil tank which serviced the Y was built into the adjoining wall. Perhaps it would blow. Richards thought it would. Trotting now, he went back to the fuse box and began ripping out the long tubular fuses. He got most of them before the basement lights went out. He felt his way across to the storm drain, aided by the growing, flickering light of the burning papers. He sat down with his feet dangling and then slowly eased in. When his head was below the level of the floor, he pressed his knees against the sides of the pipe to hold himself steady and worked his arms up above his head. It was slow work. There was very little room to move. The light of the fire was brilliant yellow now, and the crackling sound of burning filled his ears. Then his groping fingers found the lip of the drain, and he slid them up until they gripped the vented cover. He yanked it forward slowly, supporting more and more of the weight with the muscles of his back and neck. When he judged that the far edge of the cover was on the edge of dropping into place, he gave one last fierce tug. The cover dropped into place with a clang, bending both wrists back cruelly. Richards let his knees relax, and he slid downward like a boy shooting the chutes. The pipe was coated with slime, and he slid effortlessly about 12 feet to where the pipe elbow bent into a straight line. His feet struck smartly, and he stood there, like a drunk, leaning against a lamppost. But he couldn't get into the horizontal pipe. The elbow bend was too sharp. The taste of claustrophobia became huge, gagging. Trapped, his mind babbled. Trapped in here, trapped, trapped. A steel scream rose in his throat, and he choked it down. Calm down. Sure, it's very hackneyed, very trite, but we must be very calm down here. Very calm, because we are at the bottom of this pipe, and we can't get up, and we can't get down, and if the fucking oil tank goes boom, we are going to be fricasseed very neatly, and... Slowly he began to wiggle around until his chest was against the pipe instead of his back. The slime coating acted as a lubricant, helping his movement. It was very bright in the pipe now, and getting warmer. The vented cover threw prison bar shadows on his struggling face. Once leaning against his chest and belly and groin, with his knees bending the right way, he could slip down further, letting his calves and feet slide into the horizontal pipe until he was in the praying position. Still no good. His buttocks were pushing against the solid ceramic facing above the entrance to the horizontal pipe. Faintly, it seemed that he could hear shouted commands above the heavy crackle of the fire, but it might have been his imagination, which was now strained and fevered beyond the point of trust. He began to flex the muscles of his thighs and calves in a tiring seesaw rhythm, and little by little his knees began to slide out from under him. He worked his hands up over his head again to give himself more room, and now his face lay solidly against the slime of the pipe. He was very close to fitting now. He swayed his back as much as he could and began to push with his arms and head, the only things left in any position to give him leverage. When he had begun to think there was not enough room, that he was going to simply hang here, unable to move either way, his hips and buttocks suddenly popped through the horizontal pipe's opening like a champagne cork from a tight bottleneck. The small of his back scraped excruciatingly as his knees slid out from under him, and his shirt rucked up to his shoulder blades. Then he was in the horizontal pipe, except for his head and arms, which were bent back at a joint-twisting angle. He wriggled the rest of the way in and then paused there, panting, his face streaked with slime and rat droppings, the skin of his lower back abraded and oozing blood. This pipe was narrower still. His shoulder scraped lightly on both sides each time his chest rose in respiration. Thank God I'm underfed. Panting, he began to back into the unknown darkness of the pipe. -68, and counting. He made slow, mole-like progress for about 50 yards through the horizontal pipe, backing up blindly. Then the oil tank in the Y's basement suddenly blew with a roar that set up enough sympathetic vibrations in the pipes to nearly rupture his eardrums. There was a yellow-white flash, as if a pile of phosphorus had ignited. It faded to a rosy, shifting glow. A few moments later, a blast of thermal air struck him in the face, making him grin painfully. The tape camera in his jacket pocket swung and bounced as he tried to back up faster. The pipe was picking up heat from the fierce explosion and fire that was raging somewhere above him, the way the handle of a skillet picks up heat from a gas ring. Richards had no urge to be baked down here like a potato in a Dutch oven. Sweat rolled down his face, mixing with the black streaks of ordure already there, making him look, in the waxing and waning glow of the reflected fire, like an Indian painted for war. The sides of the pipe were hot to the touch now. Lobster-like, Richards humped backwards on his knees and forearms, his buttocks rising to smack the top of the pipe at every movement. His breath came in sharp, dog-like gasps. The air was hot, full of the slick taste of oil, uncomfortable to breathe. A headache surfaced within his skull and began to push daggers into the backs of his eyes. I'm going to fry in here. I'm going to fry. Then his feet were suddenly dangling in the air. Richards tried to peer through his legs and see what was there, but it was too dark behind, and his eyes were too dazzled by the light in front. He would have to take his chance. He backed up until his knees were on the edge of the pipe's ending, and then slid them cautiously over. His shoes were suddenly in water, cold and shocking after the heat of the pipe. The new pipe ran at right angles to the one Richards had just come through, and it was much larger, big enough to stand in, bent over. The thick, slowly moving water came up over his ankles. He paused for just a moment to stare back into the tiny pipe with its soft circle of reflected fire glow. The fact that he could see any glow at all from this distance meant that it must have been a very big bang indeed. Richards reluctantly forced himself to know it would be their job to assume him alive rather than dead in the inferno of the YMCA basement. But perhaps they would not discover the way he had taken until the fire was under control. That seemed a safe assumption. But it had seemed safe to assume that they could not trace him to Boston, too. Maybe they didn't. After all, what did you really see? No, it had been them. He knew it. The hunters. They'd even carried the odor of evil. It had wafted up to his fifth-floor room on invisible psychic thermals. A rat dog-paddled past him, pausing to look up briefly with glittering eyes. Richards splashed clumsily off after it in the direction the water was flowing. -67, and counting. Richards stood by the ladder, looking up, dumbfounded by the light. No regular traffic, which was something, but light. The light was surprising, because it had seemed that he'd been walking in the sewers for hours, piled upon hours. In the darkness, with no visual input and no sound but the gurgle of water, the occasional soft splash of a rat, and the ghostly thumpings in other pipes. What happens if someone flushes a John over my head? Richards wondered morbidly. His time sense had been utterly destroyed. Now, looking up at the manhole cover some 15 feet above him, he saw that the light had not yet faded out of the day. There were several circular breather holes in the cover, and pencil-sized rays of light pressed coins of sun on his chest and shoulders. No air cars had passed over the cover since he had gotten here. Only an occasional heavy ground vehicle and a fleet of Honda cycles. It made him suspect that, more by good luck and the law of averages than by inner sense of direction, he had managed to find his way to the core of the city, to his own people. Still, he didn't dare go up until dark. To pass the time, he took out the tape camera, popped in a clip, and began recording his chest. He knew the tapes were fast light, able to take advantage of the least available light, and he did not want to give away too much of his surroundings. He did no talking or capering this time. He was too tired. When the tape was done, he put it with the other exposed clip. He wished he could rid himself of the nagging suspicion, almost a certainty, that the tapes were pinpointing him. There had to be a way to beat that. Had to. He sat down stolidly on the third rung of the ladder to wait for dark. He'd been running for nearly 30 hours. Minus 66 and counting. The boy, 7 years old, black, smoking a cigarette, leaned closer to the mouth of the alley, watching the street. There had been a sudden slight movement in the street where there had been none before. Shadows moved, rested, moved again. The manhole cover was rising. It paused, and something, eyes, glimmered. The cover suddenly slid aside with a clang. Someone, or something, the boy thought with a trace of fear, was moving out there. Maybe the devil was coming out of hell to get Cassie, he thought. Ma said Cassie was going to heaven to be with Dickie and the other angels. The boy thought that was bullshit. Everybody went to hell when they died, and the devil jabbed them in the ass with a pitchfork. He'd seen a picture of the devil in the books Bradley had snuck out of the Boston Public Library. Heaven was for push freaks. The devil was the man. It could be the devil, he thought, as Richard suddenly boosted himself out of the manhole and leaned for a second on the seamed and split cement to get his breath back. No tail and no horns, not red like in that book, but the mother looked crazy and mean enough. Now he was pushing the cover back, and now, holy Jesus, he was running toward the alley. The boy grunted, tried to run, and fell over his own feet. He was trying to get up, scrambling and dropping things, and the devil suddenly grabbed him. Don't stick me with it! He screamed in a throat-close whisper. Don't stick me with no fork, you sumbitch! Shh! Shut up! Shut up! The devil shook him, making his teeth rattle like marbles in his head, and the boy shut up. The devil peered around in an ecstasy of apprehension. The expression on his face was almost farcical in its extreme fear. The boy was reminded of the comical fellows on that game show, Swim the Crocodiles. He would have laughed if he hadn't been so frightened himself. You ain't the devil, the boy said. You'll think I am if you yell.
I ain't gonna, the boy said contemptuously. What you think? I want to get my balls cut off? Jeez, I ain't even big enough to come yet.
You know a quiet place we can go?
Don't kill me, man. I ain't got nothing.
The boy's eyes, white in the darkness, rolled up at him.
I'm not going to kill you.
Holding his hand, the boy led Richards down the twisting, littered alley and into another. At the end, just before the alley opened onto an airshaft between two faceless high-rise buildings, the boy led him into a lean-to built of scrounged boards and bricks. It was built for 4 feet, and Richards banged his head going in. The boy pulled a dirty swatch of black cloth across the opening and fiddled with something. A moment later, a weak glow lit their faces. The boy had hooked a small light bulb to an old cracked car battery.
I kiped that battery myself, the boy said. Bradley told me how to fix it up. He's got books. I got a nickel bag, too. I'll give it to you if you don't kill me.
You better not. Bradley's an establishment. You kill me, and he'll make you shit in your boot and eat it.
I'm not doing any killings, Richard said impatiently. At least not little kids.
I ain't no little kid. I kiped that fucking battery myself.
The look of injury forced a dented grin to Richard's face.
All right. What's your name, kid?
Ain't no kid.
Then, sulkily,
Stacy. Okay. Stacy. Good. I'm on the run. You believe that?
Yeah, you on the run. You didn't come out of that manhole to buy dirty postcards.
He stared speculatively at Richards.
You a honky? Kind of hard to tell with all that dirt.
Stacy, I...
He broke off and ran a hand through his hair. When he spoke again, he seemed to be talking to himself.
I gotta trust somebody, and it turns out to be a kid. A kid? Oh, Jesus, you ain't even 6, boy.
I'm 8 in March,
the boy said angrily.
My sister Cassie's got cancer,
he added.
She screams a lot. That's why I like it here. Kiked that fucking battery myself. You want to toke up, mister?
No, and you don't either.
You want $2, Stacy?
Christ, yes.
Distrust slid over his eyes.
You didn't come out of no manhole with $2. That's bullshit.
Richards produced a new dollar and gave it to the boy. He stared at it with awe that was close to horror.
There's another one if you bring your brother,
Richards said, and seeing his expression, added swiftly,
I'll give it to you on the side so he won't see it. Bring him alone.
Won't do no good to try and kill Bradley, man. He'll make you shit in your boot.
And eat it, I know. You run and get him. Wait until he's alone.
$3.
No.
Listen, man, for $3, I can get Cassie some stuff at the drug. Then she won't scream so fucking much.
The man's face suddenly worked, as if someone the boy couldn't see had punched him. All right.
$3.
New dollars, the boy persisted.
Yes, for Christ's sake, yes.
Get him.
And if you bring the cops, you won't get anything. The boy paused, half in and half out of his little cubbyhole.
You stupid if you think I'd do that. I hate them fucking orcas worse than anyone. Even the devil.
He left. A 7-year-old boy with Richard's life in his grubby, scabbed hands. Richards was too tired to be really afraid. He turned off the light, leaned back, and dozed off. -65 and counting. Dreaming sleep had just begun when his tight-strung senses ripped him back to wakefulness. Confused, in a dark place, the beginning of the nightmare held him for a moment, and he thought that some huge police dog was coming for him, a terrifying organic weapon 7 feet high. He almost cried aloud before Stacy made the real world fall into place by hissing.
If he broke my fucking light, I'm going...
The boy was violently shushed. The cloth across the entrance rippled, and Richards turned on the light. He was looking at Stacy and another black. The new fellow was maybe 18, Richards guessed, wearing a cycle jacket, looking at Richards with a mixture of hate and interest. A switchblade clicked out and glittered in Bradley's hand.
If you're heel, drop down.
I'm not. I don't believe that shit.
He broke off and his eyes widened.
Hey, you're that guy on the freebie. You offed the YMCA on Huntington Avenue.
The lowering blackness of his face was split by an involuntary grin.
They said you fried 5 cops. That probably mean 15.
He come out of the manhole, Stacy said importantly. I knew it wasn't the devil right away. I knew it was some honky some bitch.
You gonna cut him, Bradley?
Just shut up and let men talk.
Bradley came the rest of the way inside, squatting awkwardly, and sat across from Richards on a splintery orange crate. He looked at the blade in his hand, seemed surprised to see it still there, and closed it up.
You're hotter than the sun, man, he said finally.
That's true.
Where you gonna get to?
I don't know. I gotta get out of Boston.
Bradley sat in silent thought.
You gotta come home with me and Stacy. We gotta talk, and we can't do it here. Too open.
All right, Richard said wearily. I don't care.
We go the back way.
The pigs are cruising at night. Now I know why.
When Bradley led the way out, Stacy kicked Richard sharply in the shin. For a moment, Richard stared at him, not understanding, and then remembered. He slipped the boy $3 new, and Stacy made it disappear. -64, and counting. The woman was very old. Richards thought he had never seen anyone as old. She was wearing a cotton print house dress with a large rip under one arm. An ancient, wrinkled dog swayed back and forth against the rip as she went about making the meal that Richard's new dollars had purchased. The nicotine-yellowed fingers, diced and pared and peeled, her feet, splayed into grotesque boat shapes by years of standing, were clad in pink terry cloth slippers. Her hair looked as if it might have been self-waved by an iron held in a trembling hand. It was pushed back into a kind of pyramid by the twisted hairnet, which had gone askew at the back of her head. Her face was a delta of time, no longer brown or black, but grayish, stitched with a radiating galaxy of wrinkles, pouches, and sags. Her toothless mouth worked craftily at the cigarette held there, blowing out puffs of blue smoke that seemed to hang above and behind her in little bunched blue balls. She puffed back and forth, describing a triangle between counter, skillet, and table. Her cotton stockings were rolled at the knee, and above them, and the flapping hem of her dress, varicose veins bunched in clock springs. The apartment was haunted by the ghost of long-departed cabbage. In the far bedroom, Cassie screamed, whooped, and was silent. Bradley had told Richards with a kind of angry shame that he should not mind her. She had cancer in both lungs, and recently had spread upward into her throat and down into her belly. She was 5. Stacy had gone back out somewhere. As he and Bradley spoke together, the maddening aroma of simmering ground beef, vegetables, and tomato sauce began to fill the room, driving the cabbage back into the corners and making Richards realize how hungry he was.
"I could turn you in, man. I could kill you and steal all that money. Turn in the body, get 1,000 more bucks and be on Easy Street."
"I don't think you could do it," Richards said. "I know I couldn't."
"Why you doing it anyway?" Bradley asked irritably. "Why you being a sucker? You that greedy?"
"My little girl's name is Kathy," Richard said. "Younger than Cassie. Pneumonia. She cries all the time, too." Bradley said nothing. "She could get better. Not like her in there. Pneumonia's no worse than a cold, but you have to have medicine and a doctor. That costs money. I went for the money the only way I could."
"You still a sucker,"
Bradley said with flat and somehow uncanny emphasis.
"You sucking off half the world and they coming in your mouth every night at 6:30. Your little girl would be better off like Cassie in this world."
"I don't believe that."
"Then you ballsier than me, man. I put a guy in the hospital once with a rupture, some rich guy. Cops chased me 3 days. But you ballsier than me."
He took a cigarette and lit it.
"Maybe you go the whole month. $1 billion. You have to buy a fucking freight train to haul it off." "Don't swear. Praise God,"
the old woman said from across the room where she was slicing carrots. Bradley paid no attention.
"You and your wife and little girl would be on Easy Street then. You got 2 days already?"
"No," Richard said. "The game's rigged. You know those 2 things I gave Stacy to mail when he and your ma went out for groceries? I have to mail 2 of those every day before midnight." He explained to Bradley about the forfeit clause and a suspicion that they had traced him to Boston by postmark.
"Easy to beat that."
"How?"
"Never mind. Later. How you gonna get out of Boston? You awful hot. Made them mad, blowing up them workers at the YMCA. They had free V on that tonight." "That was pretty sharp. Ma,"
he finished irritably,
"when's that stuff gonna be ready?
You're falling away to shadows right before you.
She coming on,
Ma said. She plopped a cover over the rich, slowly bubbling mass and walked slowly into the bedroom to sit by the girl.
I don't know, Richard said. I'll try to get a car, I guess. I've got fake papers, but I don't dare use them. I'll do something, wear dark glasses, and get out of the city. I've been thinking about going to Vermont and then crossing over into Canada.
Bradley grunted and got up to put plates on the table.
By now, they got every highway going out of Beantown blocked. A man wearing dark glasses calls attention to himself. They'd turn you into monkey meat before you get 6 miles.
Then I don't know, Richard said. If I stay here, they'll get you for an accessory.
Bradley began spreading dishes.
Suppose we get a car. You got the squeezing green? I got a name that isn't hot. There's a spick on Milk Street that'll sell me a Went for $300. I'll get one of my buddies to drive it up to Manchester. It'll be cool as a fool in Manchester because you're bottled up in Boston. You eating, Ma?
Yes, and praise God.
She waddled out of the bedroom.
Your sister's sleeping a little.
Good. He ladled up 3 dishes of hamburger gumbo and then paused.
Where's Stacy?
Said he was going to the drug,
Ma said complacently, shoveling gumbo into her toothless maw at a blinding speed.
Said he'd gone to get medicine.
If he gets busted, I'll break his ass,
Bradley said, sitting heavily.
He won't, Richard said. He's got money.
Yeah, maybe we don't need no charity money, Gray Meat.
Richards laughed and salted his meal.
I'd probably be slabbed now if it wasn't for him, he said.
I guess it was earned money. Bradley leaned forward, concentrating on his plate. None of them said anything more until the meal was done. Richards and Bradley had 2 helpings. The old woman had 3. As they were lighting cigarettes, a key scratched in the lock and all of them stiffened until Stacy came in, looking guilty, frightened and excited. He was carrying a brown bag in 1 hand, and he gave Ma a bottle of medicine.
That's prime dope, he said. That old man Curry asked me where I got $2.75 to buy prime dope, and I told him to go shit in his boot and eat it.
Don't swear or the devil will poke you,
Ma said.
Here's dinner.
The boy's eyes widened.
Jesus, there's meat in it.
No, we just shat in it to make it thicker,
Bradley said. The boy looked up sharply, saw his brother was joking, giggled, and fell to.
Will the druggist go to the cops?
Richards asked quietly.
Curry?
No. Not if there might be some more squeeze and green in his family. He knows Cassie's got to have heavy dope. What about this Manchester thing?
Yeah, well, Vermont's no good. Not enough our kind of people. The tough cops.
I get some good fella like Rich Golian to drive that went to Manchester and park it in an automatic garage. Then I drive you up in another car.
He crushed out his cigarette.
In the trunk. They're only using Jiffy sniffers on the back row. We'll go right up 495.
Pretty dangerous for you, Richard said.
Oh, I wasn't going to do it free. When Cassie goes, she's going to go out wrecked.
Praise God,
Ma said.
Still pretty dangerous for you.
Any pig grunts at Bradley. He make him shit in a boot and eat it,
Stacy said, wiping his mouth. When he looked at Bradley, his eyes glittered with the flat shine of hero worship.
You're dribbling on your shirt, Skinner,
Bradley said. He knuckled Stacy's head.
You beating your meat yet, Skinner? Ain't big enough, are you?
If they catch us, you'll go in for the long bomb, Richard said.
Who's going to take care of the boy?
He'll take care of himself if something happens,
Bradley said.
Help himself and Ma here. He's not hooked on nothing.
Are you, Stace?
Stacy shook his head emphatically.
And he knows if I find any pricks in his arm, I'll beat his brains out. Ain't that right, Stacy?
Stacy nodded.
Besides, we can use the money. It's a hurting family. So don't say no more about it. I guess I know what I'm doing.
Richards finished his cigarette in silence. while Bradley went in to give Cassie some medicine. -63, and counting. When he awoke, it was still dark, and the inner tide of his body put the time at about 4:30. The girl, Cassie, had been screaming, and Bradley got up. The three of them were sleeping in the small, drafty back bedroom. Stacy and Richards on the floor. Ma slept with the girl. Over the steady wheeze of Stacy's deep sleep respiration, Richards heard Bradley come out of the room. There was a clink of a spoon in the sink. The girl's screams became isolated moans, which trailed into silence. Richards could sense Bradley standing somewhere in the kitchen, immobile, waiting for the silence to come. He returned, sat down, farted, and then bed springs shifted creakily as he lay down.
Bradley? What?
Stacy said she was only 5.
Is that so?
Yes. The urban dialectic was gone from his voice, making him sound unreal and dreamlike.
What's a 5-year-old kid doing with lung cancer? I didn't know they got it. Leukemia, maybe, not lung cancer.
There was a bitter, whispered chuckle from the bed.
You're from Harding, right?
What's the air pollution count in Harding?
Well, I don't know,
Richard said.
They don't give them with the weather anymore. They haven't for, gee, I don't know, a long time.
Not since 2020 in Boston, Bradley whispered back. They're scared, too. You ain't got a nose filter, do you?
Don't be stupid, Richard said irritably. The goddamn things cost $200, even in the cut-rate stores. I didn't see $200 all last year. Did you?
No, Bradley said softly. He paused. Stacy's got one.
I made it. Ma and Rich Golian and some other people got them, too. You're shitting me,
Richard said.
No, man.
He stopped. Richards was suddenly sure that Bradley was weighing what he'd said already against a great many more things which he might say, wondering how much was too much. When the words came again, they came with difficulty.
We've been reading.
That freebie shit is for empty heads. The gang, you know? Some of the guys are just cruisers, you know. All they're interested in is honky stomping on Saturday night. But some of us have been going down to the library since we were 12 or so.
They let you in without a card in Boston?
No. You can't get a card unless there's someone with a guaranteed income of $5,000 a year in your family. We got some plump-ass kid and kiped his card. We take turns going. We got a gang suit we wear when we go.
Bradley paused.
You laugh at me and I'll cut you, man. I'm not laughing. At first, we only read sex books. Then when Cassie first started getting sick, I got into this pollution stuff. They got all the books on impurity counts and smog levels and nose filters in the reserve section. We got a key made from a wax blank.
Man, did you know that everybody in Tokyo had to wear a nose filter by 2012?
No.
Rich and Dink Moran built a pollution counter.
Dink drew the picture out of the book, and they did it from coffee cans and some stuff they boosted out of cars. It's hid out in the alley. Back in 1978, they had an air pollution scale that went from 1 to 20. You understand?
Yes.
When it got up to 12, the factories and all the pollution-producing shit had to shut down till the weather changed. It was a federal law until 1987, when a revised Congress rolled it back.
The shadow on the bed rose up on its elbow.
I bet you know a lot of people with asthma. That right?
Sure, Richard said cautiously. I've got a touch myself. You get that from the air. And Christ, everybody knows you stay in the house when it's hot and cloudy and the air doesn't move.
Temperature inversion, Bradley said grimly.
And lots of people get asthma, sure. The air gets like cough syrup in August and September, but lung cancer?
You ain't talking about asthma,
Bradley said.
You talking about emphysema.
Emphysema?
Richards turned the word over in his mind. He could not assign a meaning to it, although the word was faintly familiar. All the tissues in your lungs swell up. You heave and heave and heave, but you're still out of breath. You know a lot of people who get like that.
Richards thought. He did. He knew a lot of people who had died like that.
They don't talk about that war,
Bradley said, as if he had read Richard's thought.
Now, the pollution count in Boston is 20 on a good day. That's like smoking 4 packs of cigarettes a day, just breathing. On a bad day, it gets up as high as 42. Old dudes drop dead all over town. Asthma goes on the death certificate. But it's the air. The air, and they're pouring it out just as fast as they can. Big smokestacks going 24 hours a day. The big boys like it that way. Those $200 nose filters aren't worth shit. They're just 2 pieces of screen with a little piece of methylated cotton between them, that's all. The only good ones are from General Atomics. The only ones who can afford them are the big boys. They gave us the freebie to keep us off the street so we can breathe ourselves to death without making any trouble. How you like that? The cheapest GA nose filter on the market goes for $6,000. We made one for Stacy for $10 from that book. We used an atomic nugget the size of the moon on your fingernail. Got it out of a hearing aid we bought in a hawk shop for $7. How you like that?
Richard said nothing. He was speechless.
When Cassie boots off, you think they'll put cancer on the death certificate? Shit, they'll put asthma.
Else somebody might get scared. Somebody might kife a library card and find out lung cancer's up 700% since 2015.
Is that true? Or are you making it up?
I read it in a book. Man, they're killing us. The freebie is killing us. The freebie is killing us. It's like a magician getting you to watch the cakes falling out of his helper's blouse while he pulls rabbits out of his pants and puts them in his hat.
He paused and then said dreamily,
sometimes I think that I could blow the whole thing out of the water with 10 minutes talk time on the freebie.
Tell them. Show them.
Everybody could have a nose filter if the network wanted them to have them.
And I'm helping them, Richard said.
That ain't your fault. You got to run.
Killian's face and the face of Arthur M. Burns rose up in front of Richard's. He wanted to smash them, stomp them, walk on them.
Better still, rip out their nose filters and turn them into the street.
People's mad, Bradley said. They've been mad at the honkies for 30 years. All they need is a reason.
A reason. One reason. Richards drifted off to sleep with the repetition in his ears. Minus 62 and counting. Richard stayed in all day while Bradley was out seeing about the car and arranging with another member of the gang to drive it to Manchester. Bradley and Stacy came back at 6, and Bradley thumbed on the freebie.
All set, man. We go tonight.
Now?
Bradley smiled humorlessly.
Don't you want to see yourself coast to coast?
Richards discovered he did, and when the running man lead-in came on, he watched, fascinated. Bobby Thompson stared deadpan at the camera from the middle of a brilliant post in a sea of darkness. Watch, he said.
This is one of the wolves that walks among you.
A huge blow-up of Richard's face appeared on the screen. It held for a moment, then dissolved to a second photo of Richard's, this time in the John Griffin Springer disguise. Dissolved back to Thompson, looking grave.
I speak particularly to the people of Boston tonight. Yesterday afternoon, 5 policemen went to a blazing, agonized death in the basement of the Boston YMCA at the hands of this wolf, who had set a clever, merciless trap. Who is he tonight? Where is he tonight? Look! Look at him!
Thompson faded into the first of the 2 clips which Richards had filmed that morning. Stacy had dropped them in a mailbox on Commonwealth Avenue, across the city. He had let Ma hold the camera in the back bedroom after he had draped the window and all the furniture.
All of you watching this,
Richard's image said slowly. Not the technicos, not the people in the penthouses. I don't mean you shits. You people in the developments, and the ghettos, and the cheap high-rises. You people in the cycle gangs. You people without jobs. You kids getting busted for dope you don't have and crimes you didn't commit because the network wants to make sure you aren't meeting together and talking together. I want to tell you about a monstrous conspiracy to deprive you of the very breath in you. The audio suddenly became a mixture of squeaks, pops, and gargles. A moment later, it died altogether. Richard's mouth was moving, but no sound was coming out. We seem to have lost our audio. Bobby Thompson's voice came smoothly, but we don't need to listen to any more of this murderer's radical ravings to understand what we're dealing with, do we? No! The audience screamed. What will you do if you see him on your street? Turn him in! And what are we going to do when we find him? Kill him! Richards pounded his fist against the tired arm of the only easy chair in the apartment's kitchen living room. Those bastards, he said helplessly. Did you think they'd let you go on the air with it? Bradley asked mockingly. Oh, no, man. I'm surprised they let you get away with as much as they did. I didn't think, Richard said sickly. No, I guess you didn't, Bradley said. The first clip faded into the second. In this one, Richards had asked the people watching to storm the libraries, demand cards, find out the truth. He had read off a list of books dealing with air pollution and water pollution that Bradley had given him. Richard's image opened its mouth. Fuck every one of you, his image said. The lips seemed to be moving around different words, but how many of the 200 million people watching were going to notice that? Fuck all pigs. Fuck the Games Commission. I'm gonna kill every pig I see. I'm gonna... There was more. Enough so that Richards wanted to plug his ears and run out of the room. He couldn't tell if it was the voice of a mimic or a harangue made up of spliced bits of audio tape. The clip faced to a split screen of Thompson's face and the still photo of Richards. Behold the man, Thompson said. The man who would kill. The man who would mobilize an army of malcontents like himself to run riot through your streets, raping and burning and overturning. The man would lie, cheat, kill. He has done all these things. Benjamin Richards! The voice cried out with a cold, commanding Old Testament anger. Are you watching? If so, you have been paid your dirty blood money. $100 for each hour, now number 54, that you have remained free, and an extra $500. 100 for each of these 5 men. The faces of young, clear-featured policemen began appearing on the screen. The still had apparently been taken at a police academy graduation exercise. They looked fresh, full of sap and hope, heartbreakingly vulnerable. Softly, a single trumpet began to play taps. And these, Thompson's voice was now low and hoarse with emotion, these were their families. Wives, hopefully smiling. Children that had been coaxed to smile into the camera. A lot of children. Richards, cold and sick and nauseated, lowered his head and pressed the back of his hand over his mouth. Bradley's hand, warm and muscular, pressed his neck. Hey, no. No, man. That's put on. That's all fake. They're probably a bunch of old harness bulls who... Shut up! Richard said. Oh, shut up. Just... Please. Shut up. $500, Thompson was saying, and infinite hate and contempt filled his voice. Richard's face on the screen again, cold, hard, devoid of all emotion save an expression of bloodlust that seemed chiefly to be in the eyes. 5 police, 5 wives, 19 children. It comes to just about $17.25 for each of the dead, the bereaved, the heartbroken. Oh, yes, you work cheap,
Ben Richards. Even Judas got 30 pieces of silver, but you don't even demand that. Somewhere, even now, a mother is telling her little boy that Daddy won't be home ever again because a desperate, greedy man with a gun.
Killer!
A woman was sobbing.
Vile, dirty murderer! God will strike you dead! Strike him dead!
The audience over the chant. Behold the man! He has been paid his blood money, but the man who lives by violence shall die by it, and let every man's hand be raised against Benjamin Richards! Hate and fear in every voice, rising in a steady, throbbing roar. No, they wouldn't turn him in. They would rip him to shreds on sight. Bradley turned off the screen and faced him. That's what you're dealing with, man. How about it? Maybe I'll kill them, Richard said in a thoughtful voice. Maybe before I'm done, I'll get up to the 90th floor of that place and just hunt up the maggots who wrote that. Maybe I'll just kill them all.
Don't talk no more,
Stacy burst out wildly.
Don't talk no more about it.
In the other room, Cassie slept her drugged, dying sleep. Minus 61, and counting. Bradley had not dared drill any holes in the floor of the trunk, so Richards curled in a miserable ball with his mouth and nose pressed toward the tiny notch of light, which was the trunk's keyhole. Bradley had also pulled out some of the inner trunk insulation around the lid, and that let in a small draft. The car lifted with a jerk, and he knocked his head against the upper deck. Bradley had told him the ride would be at least an hour and a half, with two stops for roadblocks, perhaps more. Before he closed the trunk, he gave Richards a large revolver.
Every 10th or 12th car, they give it a heavy looking over, he said. They open the trunk to poke around. Those are good odds, 11 to 1. If it don't come up, plug you some pork.
The car lurched and heaved over the potholed, crack-crazed streets of the inner city. Once a kid jeered and there was the thump of a thrown piece of paving. Then the sounds of increasing traffic all around them and more frequent stops for lights. Richards lay passively, holding the pistol lightly in his right hand, thinking how different Bradley had looked in the gang suit. It was a sober Dillon Street double-breasted, as gray as bank walls. It was rounded off with a maroon tie and a small gold NAACP pen. Bradley had made the leap from scruffy gang member.
Pregnant ladies, stay away. Some of us'ns eat fetuses.
To a sober black business fellow who would know exactly who to tom.
You look good, Richard said admiringly. In fact, it's damn incredible.
Praise God, Ma said.
I thought you'd enjoy the transformation, my good man, Bradley said with quiet dignity. I'm the district manager for Raygon Chemicals, you know. We do a thriving business in this area. Fine city, Boston. Immensely convivial.
Stacy burst into giggles.
You best shut up, nigga, Bradley said. Else I make you shit in your boot and eat it.
You tom so good, Bradley,
Stacy giggled, not intimidated in the least.
You really fucking funky.
Now the car swung right onto a smoother surface and descended into a spiraling arc. They were on an entrance ramp, going onto 495 or a feeder expressway. Copper wires of tension were stuffed into his legs.
1 in 11. That's not bad odds.
The car picked up speed and height, kicked into drive, then slowed abruptly and kicked out. A voice, terrifyingly close, yelling with monotonous regularity,
"Pull over! Have your license and registration ready! Pull over! Have your..."
Already? Starting already.
You so hot, man.
Hot enough to check the trunk on one car in 8? Or 6? Or maybe every one? The car came to a full stop. Richard's eyes moved like trapped rabbits in their sockets. He gripped the revolver.